Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. A lot of times I'll dive into that, but there's some things I kind of want to finish off today. And one of those things we need to finish off, whether we get there or not, is the contrast and comparison between administrative actions and using First Amendment petitions. There shouldn't be any ambiguity in understanding what a First Amendment petitioning of government is for the redress of grievances. It's not to complain that, you know, their lunch hours are too long or administrative things. The whole point is this is how we keep a check on government powers and controls. And so when you write a First Amendment petition, it shouldn't be a griping session that, you know, personal issues or those types of things. It has to be, it should be direct regarding what their responsibilities are under the Constitution, the powers given them, and if they're exercising powers that they have no business doing. I know that there's all sorts of repugnant things that our politicians have been doing. As a matter of fact, we can get caught up in all of the evil things, their diatribes, their personal behavior. But if we focus on their responsibility to support the Constitution, and we use that, because, you know, okay, so some people had many people in public office have moral turpitude. I mean, they just have no scruples whatsoever, and therefore they do all sorts of things, getting drunk, lascivious behaviors, so forth and so on. As a matter of fact, I think it's kind of come out that the COVID czar in New York was having orgies while they were locking people down. I mean, literally. The disregard for having some, you know, responsibility of setting an example when you're in a position like that, a position of public service. And so, you know, these things can easily consume us with the level of the level and magnitude of evil and wrongdoing, bad behavior, whatever. And you can go down those paths. It's almost like we've gone from the, you know, when they instituted abortion and how the argument and fight over abortion was of moral issue. You got to remember that the Constitution does not have moral value. The Constitution has very specific enumerations of responsibilities and powers. So when the federal government stepped in and actually assumed unconstitutional jurisdiction, and people argued that this is immoral and wrong, even though they're right, that does not point out that the court and the federal government has no enumerated powers to even be involved or even hearing this case. This is something that has to be left with the people of their vicinages. In the design of our Constitution, folks, in the design of this Constitution, if you read Why Counties Matter Most, you should have all the residual mass of power and governing at your county or your local level. I say or local level because there are several counties, and when I say several, it's more than what I count on one hand. When you look at all the large metropolises around the United States today, the counties that they reside in should actually be broken down into, you know, communities or vicinages where it becomes a manageable government. The county of L.A. is so big, and there are so many disparate areas in L.A. Because if you really think about it, look at Orange County. Orange County and L.A. abut next to each other, and there is a vast, a diametrically different paradigm between those two counties, or at least it used to be. And that means that Orange County was a very conservative county, and L.A. County was a very liberal county. Now, it's all kind of, you know, changed and morphed into other things over time. But when you really take it down to the neighborhoods and the communities and so forth, where it becomes a manageable form of government for the people to actually have say over that government. It's hard when you're living in a county with, what, 13 million people? At least that's what LA used to be, I think, something like that. But anyway, the point is that that's where you should be making the decisions whether you want to allow abortion to exist in that community or not. It shouldn't be a state issue. It should not be a state issue. The reason it is, by the definition of the Supreme Court, it's a state issue because they don't recognize your counties. Why don't they recognize your counties? Because you never instituted that government. Institute your county government or institute your local government and then your county government if you're in LA. And then you'll actually have, and they'll have to recognize this because that is a fundamental of the design of this constitutional republic. It's right there in the Declaration of Independence. We the people, governments are instituted by we the people. It says men, but we the people. And when you actually institute that government and you empower them with limited and defined powers, then as this proliferates throughout your state, that every county creates their own constitutions, now you have an argument to redefine that state constitution and take back the powers that they've assumed unconstitutionally. This is where you actually have arguments over whether you have the legitimate authority or not. Quit talking about morality. The Constitution was created. Folks, I say this all the time. The divine hand of providence, our creator, knew what we were going to be facing in these days, that there would be a mass of godless people, that they wouldn't even understand God if he stood in front of them. They wouldn't understand Christ and what he had done for them if he was standing in front of them, showing him his hands with the piercings in his sides and his feet. This is a sad day. But he knew that we would become so indoctrinated to actually believe the lies and deceit. So what do? We can't go in and argue based on a paradigm that these people can't even acknowledge or accept. They're not. It's not that they can't, you know, go through an academic discussion. That's a different topic altogether. But when you go in and fight with government and they say, hold on here, you're trying to create a theocracy. You're trying to put morals into our government. God knew that that was coming down the pike. So he gave us constitutions that had limited and defined powers. We have to understand by going through the ratification base, this is exactly what they kept on saying, limited and defined. So therefore, when you walk in front of your government that is practicing illegitimate powers because they're not within the limited and defined powers granted, then you call them out for that. You call them out on morality. You're not even identifying the real problem. You're only taking an emotional and or personal position. Stop it. We don't care about your emotions. If you want to be a Karen, there's plenty of Karens out there. By all means, be a Karen. And, you know, I use that term, and I apologize to all great Karens out there. You have been improperly labeled probably just because of one. And so I should probably not do it, but because it has become such a thing that, you know, everybody understands what that means, it's like that, what, Hawk Tui or whatever. I mean, these stupid things that just go viral, it becomes the label, and I don't think Karens deserve that label because I know there's good Karens out there. I've known and worked with good Karens. But anywho, quit being an emotional, obstinate, and, you know, I'll just say somebody that's enwrapped in their own personal life. Stop it. We're cognitive people. We're supposed to be civil. The framers gave us a system that demanded civility. So I'm going to go down a few things before I get to that comparison. One of the things that kind of was, you know, gnawing on me, because it's Feedback Friday, right? You know, we have certain things that have been common knowledge. And when I look at the days of enlightenment with the framers, there was this common knowledge because everybody read the scriptures, and they read the scriptures in an academic way. Now, we have today so many different versions of the Bible, and the interpretations and the language has changed so much that, you know, we're not even talking the same when we're reading the same scriptures. How has that happened? Ah, well, the devious one has been able to go down this path of confusion when people are talking of what they think the scriptures say and somebody else thinks the scriptures say. How does that not create confusion? One of the things that I think is embedded that the framers really understood, which is why they were humble men and women. Those were humble times. They didn't have the luxuries and the opulence that we live in today. Flip on a switch and you can make your living environment very suitable for the human body. They didn't have that. They didn't have environmental controls in their homes. They didn't even have light at nighttime other than what was emanating from the fire, as long as you kept that fire going. Anybody that's ever gone camping understands that. It's the same thing as your sense of, you know, your source of warmth, your source of cooking. I mean, fire was fire was a very key thing in the ages of old, you know, until we finally migrated into a much more civil society and being able to use other things. And we've gotten smarter as we've gone along in improving our lives. And in some cases, and I've said this before, this is going down another rat hole, but I don't believe when DuPont created or invented asbestos. I think that there's been lots of cases where a corporation has gone down this path of trying to do something that, you know, for good purpose, creating some insulation or something like that. And then come to find out, because remember, one of the rules, a scientific rule that a lot of people don't like to mention, is that it takes time to measure results. So you do something, you go, wow, this is really good. Look how well that insulates the heat off of that pipe. You can take your hand and actually touch that asbestos with a steaming hot pipe, and you won't burn yourself. Wow, that's amazing. It was great stuff. Then all of a sudden, over time, as it deteriorated, created dust in the atmosphere or whatever, human exposure to the substance, asbestos, all of a sudden we started realizing a lot of people started getting cancer. Now, I believe historically, and it's documented, that DuPont didn't know this originally. And as the tests started coming out, that it actually was a carcinogen, or it became something that was deadly for people to be exposed to. And they kind of suppressed that when they found that out. And now we vilify them because of that. Now, that's right there is an indictment. Just want you to understand this. That is an indictment of what everybody does. And I wanted to use this as kind of an example. It may not be a direct example, but it correlates. One of the things that the framers knew, because they were righteous men, and they knew and they recognized when somebody became unrighteous. And so one of the things, again, this is I think this was common knowledge in their day, but it was rarely articulated. And we don't articulate this at all today. As a matter of fact, if we started talking about the things that actually were considered common knowledge like this, then I think we'd all of a sudden start changing our paradigms. One of the things that I've just articulated this way, that in their day, they recognize that as soon as a person is elevated to a position of public trust, which gives them charge over those whom they serve. In other words, you're elevated into public trust. Well, in the old days, that means you're a sheriff, you're a prince or a king or what have you. But you were there to serve the people, right? A righteous person, this is the common knowledge, in their minds and paradigms, they understood that a righteous person that was elevated into that position humbles themselves as a servant. However, the common man or woman will always, when they step into this service, views this as receiving a scintilla of power. This really overcomes them with temptations and they begin to exert impure power and or wicked control over those whom they are to serve. In our constitutions, our framers understood this, and this is why instead of granting general powers to those who serve us, they gave them very specific and defined powers, that they could declare war, that they could tax to do that, that they could tax to basically support our national defense and our security to protect our sovereignty by instituting a militia to help educate the public, as we kind of talked about yesterday, maybe not as much as we needed to because we still have to go back to it. But the importance of the militia and the importance of training our children to become executors of the law. Well, what does that take to do that? One, you have to understand the law. And two, you have to understand, you know, the principles of executing and how to be just and how to serve. If we're all serving each other in executing the law, it gets harder to get this feeling that you are a prince or a king. Now, there may be people that obtain ranks in managements and so forth. And that's where, you know, these problems come in, because people think that that is granting them this unabashed power. That is not the case. They only have power to do certain things. And we need to maintain that in context. So one of the things that kind of bothered me in looking at another, I'll just say, phrase that is just common knowledge. It came up in a conversation last night, the lesser of two evils. And I go, oh my, you know, this reminds me of just a little while ago, the Pope actually came out because they said, who are you going to vote for? And the Pope didn't want to actually tip his hands. But if you really think about it, if you understand a person's principles, then it's easy to detect and determine, discriminate, discern, logically deduce who they would support and who they would be basically, you know, behind. But this concept of voting for the lesser of two evils really comes into this fact that we're stuck in this doctrine. And we're stuck in this doctrine or policy that, you know, basically, it's got a stranglehold on us, folks. Why is it that the lesser two evils gets worse? Why is it that we don't have a clear black and white contrast? And so this is what we really dove into last night. There's never a mention of a process forward, because one has to question, as I look at this, one has to question the policies and doctrines that the Pope has espoused in his duties regarding government. Because the Pope is always constantly, we've heard him and cardinals and other people in religious positions state that nations need to open their borders, because the Pope is really more of a globalist that wants to actually restore the Roman Catholic Empire. Because it's about power to them as well. It's not about saving souls. This is why they want to melt down these sovereignties. And as a matter of fact, if the Pope understood the divine nature of the Constitution, and he was a divine person, because he just doesn't have this. And this is the thing that's tying my tongue here. The Pope is not there. He is serving a different master. Because when you look at how states come in as sovereigns into this union, in contrast to every other global governing body, you got NATO, the UN, there's all these little, the WTO, there's all of these different entities, and none of them, other than the U.S. Constitution, empowers the states and the people to create this residual mass of political power closest to the people. Every other governing body out there centralizes the power to the top. If the Roman Catholic Empire was actually restored, all power would be centralized with the Pope. That's how it was when the empire crumbled. Why would we want to go back to that? Why wouldn't we want to get closer and closer to empowering the people? So when you really start looking and creating a contrast and a comparison between what they're actually trying to restore and what we need to restore this limited and defined hybrid constitutional republic. It's a hybrid constitutional republic because we have a federal constitution, we have state constitutions, and we need to have county constitutions where we actually deploy this republican form of government of representation, bicameral representation. You know, when you have a county as big as, you know, Orange County, New York, they have 25 legislators in that county, then they should have these vicinages, you know, where they, you know, kind of group out that county to where those local organizations, those local governing bodies would actually have be able to create a Senate so that they would have defined powers, you know, to actually look at the differences and responsibilities between a representative of the people and a representative of the governing body below them, below this level, right? In the Senate, in the federal level, they represent the states. In the states, at the in the with the legislative body, the Senate in the states represents the county governments. So in a county government, if you have that large of a county where there's that many people, just remember, we understood that representation, you cannot have adequate representation unless you actually have a real voice where your those who represent you can actually say, yes, I hear and I understand what you're talking about. When you create such a wide, large mass of people, a million people, there's no way a million people are represented by one person. George Washington, we talked about this. George Washington was the one that reduced the representation from 40,000 down to 30. He felt that people could be better represented if they only represented 30,000 people. Look at some of the states today. I mean, California, the representation is through the charts. It's well over 100,000. Well over. When you look at New Hampshire, it's down to like 1,500. Look at the disparity between who has real voice in their government in New Hampshire compared to California. The people of California have lost their representation because they've just believed that that's, you know, they got all these powers anyway. No. No, they're limited and defined. They have these constitutions. And the problem is that these state constitutions have grown and grown and grown where the state has actually assumed powers and created amendments because the federal government told them to do it, not because the people did. The corruption and the collusion has been our biggest problem. So one of the things that we need to do is we need to actually have this common conversation or create common knowledge about this doctrine of the lesser of two evils. Just like I was saying about how people that obtain a scintilla of power become wicked and start ruling us because they go outside those bounds. We have to hold them accountable. This is all basically helping you understand the importance of First Amendment petitions in calling out those who serve us when they step across the line of exercising power not delegated. When they created Obamacare and the 26 states basically stood up against it, the big mistake was that they actually went into the federal court. The federal court had no jurisdiction. It is clear right there within the Constitution. They had no jurisdiction. And we keep granting them, or by going into the court over every matter under the sun, we keep surrendering our sovereignty. Now, I know that this really upsets people of law, you know, lawyers, judges, and so forth, when they hear these things. But these things are the truth. So when we come back, I'm going to dive into, you know, a little bit of personal history, but I want to actually finish this talk about eradicating this doctrine of evils, voting for two evils. Then I want to actually, you know, go over a couple of other things, but I want to give you some family history as well. So hopefully we get to, if not, folks, it's on you to make these contrasting comparisons. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Now, let me get back to this concept of lesser two evils. Where is the discussion of how to eradicate this permeation in our society that is absolutely sliding us down the hill? This is all stemming from the fact that those who serve us are using political theatrics to compromise things that they have no authority to compromise. And we are, because of our illiteracy on these simple concepts of the concept, this is not rocket science. Understand powers of attorney. If you look at a power of attorney, you will realize that if you grant general powers, you are in trouble. If you grant specified powers, the better you specify the power and limit them, the better off you are, the more secure you are. We have lost the concept that our constitutions were written as limited and specified powers of attorney. We are only granting them limited powers. So when we elect them, and we say, go do things, if those things we ask them to do, and this is where the communists came in, and this is where the communists really started blurring the lines and the education of illiteracy and actually perverting what kind of government we have with the Republican-Democrat uniparty, folks, we can eradicate this whole concept of lesser of two evils. This goes back to for several years, I've been trying to seek a party to actually take a stand, abandon the agendas, and take a stand on the Constitution and its limited and defined powers granted. If they don't have the power to do it, they can't do it, period. You do that, and all of a sudden, everything starts washing away. We can eradicate this. You have no authority. I mean, you know, you may not like your politician because of their religious faith, because of their personal habits, because of whom they choose to associate with, or their children, or the car they drive. You know, we have an abundance of ways of dividing and conquering ourselves. But we should not be allowing our government to divide and conquer us, especially with powers not granted. It goes back to this going to that debt is fraud, folks. They don't have the power and authority to write checks for spending on all of the things that they're spending. Very little is legitimate spending. So I know this makes sense to the listener. You just need to start becoming the stateswoman to actually get out there and help people understand, why are we allowing politicians to assume powers not granted? This goes right back to this concept of, you know, righteous rule. Are they going to rule us with those things delegated and stay within those? Are they going to try to assume powers not granted? It gets really hard when you have it written down in the Constitution. Most people today, as a matter of fact, the whole world has become so illiterate regarding how their government is to serve them. You know, folks, we can turn this around right here and now. And I'm telling you, we are turning this around. And as a matter of fact, I'll even say this. When we start actually saying these things, and we actually have really good people in office, because we do, I'm convinced that there are really good people in office right now. We don't necessarily have to challenge them. But what do we do when we actually have somebody in office that actually is a Hitler? And we use that as hyperbole, I know that, but here's a person that doesn't feel like they can be limited by those defined powers in the Constitution. They feel like the power that they get under this party system, this party form of government, they can just compromise anything and they can crush us. This is how our government is actually causing all sorts of problems over people that, you know, are being destroyed. We kind of talk about this too in many of the conversations I have with groups over, you know, every week I have a multitude of conversations every week, not just this show, with sometimes with listeners, mentoring groups, and so forth. And I inject in myself, or I'm asked to inject myself into some of these new groups. And when I get into these new groups, I challenge them and say, why are you even going down these paths, going into a court over issues they have no jurisdiction over? None. When we look at the fact that they have created such a monolithic or such a massive metropolis of cards. Folks, the process of actually getting rid of the lesser of two evil is this way, and this is how it came up yesterday. There's a group, Orange County Strong has sent out these pledges for their politicians. If they want this group's support, they need to sign this. And one of the politicians is pushed back. And so that politician said, I have a problem with signing this, because they recognize that this pledge basically says if you violate your oath of office, you're gone. And they said, well, this is insinuating that I'm violating my oath and so forth. And so the reality is that person is. As a matter of fact, there's not a person serving us today that's perfect. They're all violating their oath. Any person, you think you have a politician that is serving you in any capacity that believes that they're supporting or they're fulfilling their oath of office, if they take an oath to support that Constitution and they tell you that in the capacity of their job they are doing that, I'm telling you they're not. Because I can always find a multitude of things that they're failing to do to truly support the Constitution for the United States of America. When you raise your arm to that square and say you will support it, it doesn't mean that you're going to put your uniform or your badge on and go and arrest people, and that's what you got to do. When that Constitution is being attacked, we are to defend it and support it against enemies, foreign and domestic. That is the fundamental requirement of every U.S. citizen. So when things are happening that shouldn't be happening, we the people have the responsibility of petitioning government for the redress of grievances. You have no authority to do this. If you start really connecting the dots, you start seeing how we actually have, through petitions and a limited defined constitution, a way to actually eradicate the lesser of two evils doctrine. You get it now? Because when this person gets elected, and you're going to vote for that person because you don't have a choice, but what you do the day after the election and that person is going to be going up, this is what you do, and I want everybody to hear this. You want to reach out as an organization like the party, if you're a party functioning organization or grassroots. You reach out to all of the candidates that are going to be representing you and you say, congratulations. If they are not on board with fully supporting the Constitution, then you need to make a template or a mass letter that kind of goes out with the same tone. Anyway, so you create this template of a couple different templates, those who have signed the pledge and those who have not. You got these two templates. and you send it to each of them and say, congratulations and thank you for signing the pledge. We're watching you, and we're going to make sure that you actually adhere to your duties in supporting that Constitution. And then to the candidates that failed or refused to sign that pledge, say, congratulations on your election in representing us. However, you failed to sign the pledge, but that doesn't mean we're not going to hold you accountable. And as a matter of fact, from this point on, everything you do, we are going to highlight and we're going to petition you. We are going to become a, we're going to initiate a PR campaign on whether you're supporting the Constitution or not. Therefore, for every infraction, when you fail to actually stand up and, you know, state, you know, the accuracy of the issues and the, your failure to actually demand that the government above you start adhering to and getting into full compliance of the Constitution, if you're not doing that, then you're not supporting the Constitution. So that's the message you send to these people. And as a matter of fact, you also send a message to them that you've now taken on the challenge that you're going to start developing and nurturing individuals in this area, this legislative district, this county, this vicinage, and you are going to have somebody prepared to challenge them based on your oath of office and supporting the Constitution. And good luck to you. We hope that you actually become a champion of the Constitution so that we can use these people in a different capacity or actually use you to promote and bring people in to replace you that will actually do what they're supposed to do. When we start creating a bench, folks, when you actually start identifying people that are understand that this is a very limited and defined position, that they can't actually do things that aren't granted to them. Even if the state comes down and tells them that we want you to do this, and you look up at the state and go, you don't even have that power. The federal government doesn't have that power because it all starts from way up, actually, in the cellars, in the dark bowels of Mordor. This is where the evil rises up from the federal government. Because they come and say with money, they say, you got to do these things. No, you don't. You don't have to do those things because they don't have the authority to tell you to do those things. But what we do is we can't nullify. This is why we go through these documents. We can't nullify. What we have to do is we have to bond together to where we have a significant stand to basically say, if you don't stop doing this, then we're going to have to, you know, when dad comes home, me and your dad are going to have a conversation with you and we're going to set things straight. Because right now we got to start working at getting the parents in the state together to hold that state accountable. Then once we get enough states that are held accountable, we got to get those parents together to hold that other child accountable. And when we look at we the people, we are the parents. We create the first level of children, which is our local level. And that next level could be the counties, or it is the counties. Whatever that first level we create with the Constitution for our vicinage, and in 9 times out of 10, for over half of America, that's going to be counties. Well over half of America. It's going to be a small fraction that will be probably lower governments. I'm not the king, and I'm not going to, you know, make, you know, these defined, this is what you got to do, black and white type of thing. This is a spirit. This is a concept of a form of government that empowers the people. And when you start understanding that, then you can actually take this concept and apply it to a metropolis, or you can apply it to a rural area. We, the people, have to delegate those powers. And in the process of auditing, in the process of creating constitutional compliance committees, as people, we educate ourselves on the Constitution and we start actually learning what to do. This is how we get rid of this doctrine of the lesser of two evils. Now, one of the things I kind of wanted to say, because this is a lead-in to a scripture, and it's kind of not a direct correlation, but it is an indirect correlation, but I'm sure some people have heard there's a football, NFL football player, and his name, I guess, is Tariq Hill. Anyway, and I think he's in Florida, and he was arrested. And he was a little manhandled by, you know, the police officer. Now, this is kind of funny because there's a lot of manhandling going on out on the field. And, you know, whether there's a flag for every little manhandle, every little, you know, improper hit or what have you. I don't think, you know, everybody, because we do know that there's those fans that want flags flown for everything. Oh, that should have been a flag. There should be a flag on every play, technically, folks. Period. There should be a flag on every play because the players out there are, you know, they act badly. But anyway, so this player got arrested. And this is the funny thing. He admits that and regrets that the officer, he did things that the officer had to restrain him for. And he's calling for this officer to be fired. In other words, even though this officer has been sanctioned or called out, I want people to understand there's a huge difference between a police officer, and I'm not fans of local police. I'm not fans of mercenary forces, period. But we have created them, and until we get rid of them, we have to understand that they were created for a very specific purpose, to deal with bad people. You want to put and personify a bad person and behave a certain way because you're entitled, then we're the problem. But there's another side to this. Bottom line, we can go down the rat hole of the legitimacy of traffic laws. We can go down that rat hole because I've talked about this before. You know, we actually have these problems of the penal system. I've even talked about that before. You know, how screwed up, you know, the courts apply bail, you know, because it's unusual punishments the way they do it. And we could actually create a bail system that would be far more accurate. The better we can be just, the more just our system is. And we can't accept the latitude or the ambiguity of judges having the discretion of doing, you know, being those people to administer justice. This goes back to what I was saying about when people become, you know, a person in public trust. Because we trust them, we want to make sure that they're actually doing what they should be doing. And when they make decisions because it's based on bias and not based on parameters, and we have the ability to do this. We live in an age with technology that we could actually determine what would be a fair and just bail for a kid that, you know, is a single parent or just married with a couple of kids and he only has so much disposable income and so forth. What would be a good punishment bail for drunk driving for him in contrast to a similar conditions of a young kid with a young family, and he's making millions of dollars because he's this Tyreek Hill, where he's making all this money. The difference or the punishment should be equally felt between this young, you know, laborer and this professional athlete. If we had a just system, they would both feel the weight of the burden of acting badly. Period. So, we can easily go down these hills, but we can fix these things. And I think that sometimes when we really look, this goes back to age-old solutions. Again, this may not be a direct correlation, but I do believe that there is a great correlation to this. Because if we turn to Deuteronomy 19, chapter 19, verses 16 through 19, this is what it says. If a false witness rises up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both men between whom the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priests, or before the judges, or before the people, the jury, because I'm just interpreting and adding some things here, and the judges or the jury shall make diligent inquisition. This is what our constitutional compliance committees must do. They must make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brothers because he wants to hurt them, then ye shall do unto him as he had thought to have been done unto his brother. In other words, he claims him for stealing and wants him to be punished by the law for stealing. Well, then when you realize that this person has perjured themselves and tried to use the system to cause harm, then you levy the harm upon that person. There's plenty of times where we've had lawyers convince people to take out these lawsuits to try to hurt people. If we actually have common law, if we actually start restoring our legal system, we would get rid of these ambulance chaser lawyers in trying to get people to ingratiate themselves. And as a matter of fact, the more we become righteous, the less we become greedy. We've created such a level of greed. Look at what it has done. Look at the type of people that it has created. We now have Bill Gateses of the world. Instead of being, the Hitler of Germany, he's becoming the Hitler of the world. And he's not the only one. There is a huge body of governing elite, rich people, bankers, what have you. Some of them we even don't even know the names. They're that rich and they're that evil. And I'm not going to, and you hear me say this all the time, I don't care what their names are. I know Bill Gates. He's an American citizen, should be stripped of everything. He should lose his riches, and he should lose his ability to be an American citizen, and he should be deported just like a Tory. Because as a U.S. citizen, it is his responsibility to support and defend the Constitution. And because he's actually waging an insurrection against the Constitution and building up a global government, he stands and should lose everything. The problem is that he has most of his riches. All these people have put these things in accounts away from America. Because if it's in our grasp, we could actually take it from them. And I think that they've done this and they know this, because down the road, if America does wake up, they could lose everything. They could lose everything. If America wakes up and we go down this path, because it's not that I'm blind or deaf to justice, to regaining those things that have been stolen from us. That's not I don't think that's not why I'm here. That doesn't mean that you can't do it. When it comes to the law can be applied. I'm not here to say that we can't apply that law. I'm here to say we have to restore the law first. We have to focus on holding government accountable to the law, to the Constitution, and restore the rule of law. And I'm giving you the processes of how to do that from the tactical level and the strategic. And the two level, it is literally this. First Amendment petitions, it's all interposition. First Amendment petitions is interposing on your local and your state politicians. And then Republic Review is the interposition of the states upon the federal government. It's all interposition. It's not this, setting up these foreign entities or creating shadow governments or becoming a secessionist where you separate yourself as a U.S. citizen. Folks, I understand. I understand this is a confusing time. We've got all sorts of charlatans all over the place saying, come this way, let's do this. And the place where it is the most confusing is in these halls of where good people reside and work and associate. Because that is where Satan needs to maintain this confusion of dividing and conquering. All those people on the other side, they've accepted the blind lies. They have never challenged them. They just accept them. And boy, are they being rewarded. If we're going to change things, we have to take a stand. You have to become that statesman. You have to be able to start standing up and holding public servants accountable. I can't do this for everybody. It is not a one-person thing. Trump can't do this for everybody. Now, I've created a 13-series show. If you want to, just go look at what a constitutional president could do. It's right up there in this year's podcast. Go look for a constitutional president. There were 13 shows I did. And this is what a constitutional president could do in leading the people in taking back their counties, states, and their federal government, or I should say taking back and restoring the Constitution as the rule of law. We have the ability, and you can do this. Have faith. As a matter of fact, that right there becomes I think the catalyst. You have to have faith. When you start acting in faith, you have no idea what the heck's happening. And all of a sudden, people start going, you know what, you're right. And they actually start getting on board because what? They had just tasted the truth, and they're good people and recognize the truth. Any good person that recognizes the truth starts making those changes in their lives. The framers, as I said before, the efforts that they went to in preserving civility in our society, not only did they preserve it, they demanded it by actually empowering we the people to execute the laws. This is how it is ensconced in our Constitution, how civility is ensconced in our Constitution. We're not to be subjects of mercenary forces and princes and kings and rulers and magistrates. We are the law. We are the essence and the epitome of actualizing the law because we are to execute it. This is the epitome of a self-governing system. First, when they really went down this path, what they did was they created this limited and clearly defined government, the general government and state government, through the constitutions. Nobody fathomed that government would get to a point where we could actually have government do all sorts of things. Some things are very good. Highways and waterways and travel ways becoming more and more efficient. We now have a government when it comes to transportation that they're deliberately injecting things that slow you down, not because they're safer, because they control you. It is about changing your behavior. Go look at the term traffic calming. Google or do a search, whatever search engine you like. Search for traffic calming and the Department of Transportation. And you'll go to the page where they teach you why they're trying to calm your traffic. They're trying to slow you down. When government should actually be encouraging the best and most safe travel as possible, as fast as possible, so that you can be as productive as possible. The next thing that the framers did is they laid out the opportunity in the Constitution for the people to extend this design into the states. The original states failed to really adopt this. In some ways, they kind of did, but they really failed because there's not one state out there that actually has a county constitution because they marginalize the growing role of government over time. Had they been, you know, Aristotle, they would have known, and maybe they would have written down, hey, every time you create a body of people that reaches a certain point, or reaches a certain mass, then those people literally need to start creating their constitution and then delegating to, you know, up the chain. And probably the best way to do this is where I really think the wisdom comes in, is that the best way to do this is to divide those metropolises into smaller counties. Because that's where you can actually start creating these divergences. When you start looking at the utilities and those types of things, I mean, let's start getting logical so that when we're sitting at the table, we can make the best decisions. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Have a great weekend.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.